you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk, 2 hours of Winnipeg Jets talk, NHL talk. We look around the entire NHL, get you up to speed on everything associated with your local hometown Winnipeg Jets and the NHL in general. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can reach us in studio at Illegal Curve is how you can do so on Twitter. You can also send us text messages 129090, so you can send a text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. You can reach us in studio that way as well. Without further ado, I say good morning to Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Nice to be back on air with you. We took last week off, of course, to celebrate Ezra and his bachelor party. We had a great time. We survived. That's more important. I say good morning to both of you gentlemen.
Yeah, what's up, boys? It is good to be back. It's rare that we take any time off in July. We usually take the August-long weekend show off, but yeah. There's a lot to talk about, so I'm pretty pumped up, Drew, even though I was hoping to have the week off from you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you were on the bachelor party.
So. I wasn't invited. I just showed up. That's sort of how it worked. And, you know, I happened to know the dates and the times as when it was going to be, and I just showed up there, and you guys were nice enough not to ask me to leave immediately, so I did appreciate that. David, good morning to you, sir.
Thank you, Drew. It's been a good week. Busy. We've played some baseball this week, and so I have seen you recently. In fact, I've seen you too much of late.
Well, at least we're all unanimous now. We feel as though we see too much of each other. That's the important part as far as I'm concerned. Let's get right into it with the talk about the Winnipeg Jets. They were busy this week signing a couple of their restricted free agents and signing a former 2015 draft pick. We'll start, of course, with Andrew Kopp. He gets the biggest of the three contracts. It's a two-year, $2 million deal for Andrew Kopp. He's going to get paid an average annual value of $1 million, a salary cap hit per season of $1 million. Brandon Tanev, he was an undrafted free agent that the Jets signed a couple years ago, if you recall. He gets a one-year, $700,000 contract. And Mason Appleton, who was a 2015 sixth-round pick, he signs his three-year entry-level contract. Let's start with the Kopp signing. Andrew Kopp is sort of came into his own a little bit last year when he got an opportunity to play a bit of a top six role with the Jets when they had some injuries. Obviously, that's not where he's best suited, but I think 2 years, $2 million, $1 million a season, that sounds about right for a guy in Andrew Kopp who the Jets have a lot of, I think they still have a lot of high hopes for him.
Yeah, you mentioned that he really did improve this year, and you're right. I mean, Andrew Kopp did get a whiff of the top six for the Jets. And, you know, I really like Andrew Kopp's game. And for me, he is a staple of that fourth line now. And, you know, if there are injuries, he might get bumped up to the third line or second line, depending on where Coach Maurice likes him. But, I mean, when you're talking about these signings, Andrew Kopp, for me, is the more important signing. I was actually a little bit surprised that Brandon Tanev got a one-way contract. I thought it might be a two-way contract, and that's not anything against Brandon Tanev. It's just in his first year in the NHL, he struggled at times, and that's why he ended up playing with the Manitoba Moose. When you're talking about Andrew Kopp, he obviously spent the majority of the year with the Jets, all of the year with the Jets, in fact. But, I mean, Kopp is one of those depth players, and, you know, he's still young at 23 years old, and he's a guy that I know that the Jets are very high on. He's a guy that kind of was eased into the lineup. He played the one game a couple of years back and then had the full season 2 years ago and ran into some injury problems this year. But Kopp is a guy that has shown his versatility, and he's a guy that can play center or wing. You can put him out on the PK. And let's be honest, guys, you know, most likely Andrew Kopp is never going to score 30 goals in the NHL. He might never score 20. He's a guy, though, that could easily score 15 goals, in my opinion, and you know, again, I think that he was a guy in the expansion draft that even though you can afford to lose him because you have other young players in the system that can replace him, such as a guy like Jack Roslovic for the Moose, he's still a guy that's proved to be very valuable. So it's nice he gets a two-year deal, and the Jets lock up a guy who's proved to be a very good contributor for the team.
Yeah, and I from Kopp's perspective, I remember when he got sent down last year, and he played, I think, 8 games total with the Moose, and he basically said, I know the kind of player I am, the kind of player I can become. And, you know, it was interesting because he didn't take it as a negative. Like, he understood the reason was why. It's similar to what happened to Adam Lowry when he got sent down to the Moose. And so he got that sent down, played the 8 games, got called back up. And the fact is that, you know, he didn't have any goals, and he's, you know, I think he had 5 assists total. But, like, the fact was that he had a positive attitude, and he just talked about the type of player that he knows he can be and what he needs to do to get to that level. So I agree with Ezzy. He's right. It's just, I think he's the type of player who has that versatility that if you need to bump him up, you can. I mean, he had 9 goals, 8 assists last year with the Jets in 64 games.
Sorry, Dave, that's why I should have had Hockey DB up. I forgot that he played those 8 games with the Moose
last year. Yeah, no, I mean, but it was like right in the middle of the season anyways, right? But, like, the fact is, he's a nice little player. I mean, I'm with Ezzo. I'm kind of surprised Brandon Tanev got the one-way deal. I thought because I think he's more likely to be sitting in the press box or more likely playing with the Moose than he is to be, you know, with the Jets. But again, maybe he's adding something to his game, or the team plans on using him in a certain way that they didn't last year. We don't know. And the Mason Appleton signing, I was a little surprised about that, actually, because, you know, he was named captain by former Jet 1.0 Danton Cole, who's now the head coach in Michigan State. And so that was just in May. And he had a nice season, a nice sophomore season last year with the Spartans. So I kind of expected him to come back. So obviously when he had some conversations with the team, and they decided that it made sense for him and for them to kind of move his game into the professional ranks.
The timing of the Appleton one, we're not going to go too deep into him because I don't think anybody in this room expects that he's going to be a member of the Winnipeg Jets this coming season.
Nope.
He's you know, destined to play for the Manitoba Moose this year. Mm-hmm. The timing is just a little odd. It is mid-July, and you would expect that a player who's going to come out of college usually does so, you know, closer to when their college season ends. And obviously that hasn't been the case. College season ended, you know, ends back in April or May. And I mean, Michigan State didn't qualify for any sort of the Frozen Four or anything like that. So it ended even earlier than that. So the timing of the Mason Appleton departure from Michigan State is a little unusual, but I mean, money talks. And I'm not saying that in the negative sense of the word. It's that, you know, the Jets made him a contract offer. And, you know, when you're that age and you're a sixth-round draft pick, there's no guarantee you're even going to get an entry-level contract for a lot of players.
Yeah, and when you talk about unusual, it's unusual for college players specifically, as you mentioned. And when you talk about Mason Appleton, development camp just wrapped up, a week and a half ago. And I thought he looked really impressive. Mason Appleton's a guy that is not going to play for the Jets this year. He's got good size. And the reality is, Drew, the Jets stay in contact with these players all throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they just decided to sign Mason Appleton within the last week. This is something that they've discussed for the last, I imagine, few months. And Dave mentioned that he was named captain. It's a big blow to the Michigan State team. Michigan State was not a team that was considered to be a Frozen Four candidate, but he was a big part of that Michigan State team. Dave mentioned he had a really good year in his second year, and a guy like Mason Appleton, you know, you mentioned the money, sure, that's part of it, but it's also for the Jets knowing that he can take the next step, and they see him potentially being in the lineup a couple of years from now. So why wait another year when you know that he can now play in the American Hockey League? So, you know, these are depth signings, and for me, it doesn't really change much what the Jets are trying to do moving forward, because as far as I'm concerned, what's a little bit peculiar about Brandon Tanev getting the one-year deal is now the Jets have 14 forwards on one-way contracts. That includes Michael Scarbosa. So something has to give there, because when you're talking about Kyle Connor, Nick Batan, those players are not included in the 14 one-way contracts.
Right.
So then you have 16 forwards basically for 12 spots, right, Drew?
By your math would be accurate in this sense. Yeah, you have now, of course, with Patan and with Connor, they're on entry-level deals, so they can easily move down to the AHL. They don't have to clear waivers or anything like
but
that.
But the point is, though, if Kyle Connor does make the team, or Nick Patan spends a significant amount of time with the Jets, then you have Michael Scarbosa, Brandon Tanev as your extra forwards.
I think the Jets say that it's, you know, they're you're right about the Tanev one, because this is a guy who didn't really have much of an option. If the Jets come to him with a two-way contract, he's got no leverage to move anywhere else. He's going to pretty much have to take the two-way contract. Now, it's one way, it's $700,000, so it's not, you know, the end of the world one way or the other, but it is a little bit it is a little bit of a too many, you know, one-way forwards, as you mentioned, Ezzy, unless the Jets are assuming that, you know, Kyle Connor, a guy that a lot of people have penciled in with the big team this year, is actually more destined to play another season in the AHL. We haven't even spoken about Jack Roslovic. What happens if Jack Roslovic comes into training camp and makes a tremendous impression? You know, then you do have... Now, this is a good problem to have. Having too many forwards, I think, that are cracking your lineup is a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have. And that, just because Brandon Tanev signed the one-way contract doesn't mean he's not going to spend the majority of the season with the Moose. I mean, I think there's a good chance he's the 13th forward. That's also an option for Michael Scarbosa, right? We know Michael Scarbosa is most likely a fourth liner, or he's going to play with the Moose, but he's also on a one-way contract, so that means you have to expose him on waivers. And you're right, Drew. I mean, this is a good problem to have, guys. The Jets have never had the depth that they've had at forward as they have now. Right, Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic knocking at the door to make the team. And I think Kyle Connor has a better chance of sticking with the Jets full-time over Jack Roslovic. And that's just because I think he's further ahead in his development. But there's a good chance both of those players spend significant time with the Moose. There's a good chance they spend a significant amount of time with the Jets.
Well, you know, and you mentioned Tanev, and the one guy we haven't really mentioned is Marco Dano. Because last year, often, Paul Maurice chose to play a guy like Brandon Tanev over a guy like Marco Dano.
I think that'll change this year.
I think it has to change. I mean, we've seen Brandon Tanev, and you know what he brings to the table, and all due respect, it's not much in terms of an offensive upside.
Well, Tanev is a guy, he's got great speed,
yeah,
and he's a tenacious player.
Yeah, well, we saw that in the exhibition season last year, where everyone had these high hopes as a guy who was a, you know, he was a forechecking demon during the exhibition season, and then when the games actually counted for something, he wasn't able to translate it to just the same.
Well, and this is his first pro season, let alone first NHL season, Drew. So, I mean, right. He's still relatively young, in his mid-20s, right? So I agree with you, though. I don't think anybody's expecting Brandon Tanev to be a 30-goal top six forward for the Jets. But the reality is, when you look at how many one-way contracts the Jets have at forward, I mean, something's got to give. I don't know if there's a move coming, but when you talk about Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic, my belief is that one of those two players, maybe even two of those players, are going to play some time in the NHL this year.
I would agree with you there. I think Kyle Connor, I mean, Dave, you watched him more than either of us with the Moose, given how often you know, how frequently and the extensive coverage you provide of the Moose. I think most people would say that Connor is, especially playing the wing as opposed to center, which obviously is a more difficult position, Kyle Connor is more ready to step into an NHL lineup than Jack Roslovic.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, as we all know, centers takes longer to learn, especially when you're a young center like Jack Roslovic coming in. You know, played first pro season last year with the Manitoba, and he was good, but I mean, he was very good, but again, he's learning. There's a lot to learn, so it's not, you don't just learn, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and a young player doesn't learn how to play center, especially against, you know, the best players in the world. You know, and obviously he's not coming in as the first or second line center on Winnipeg. He would come in as most likely the third line center behind Brian Little and Mark Scheifele. But the truth is that he still has a lot to learn. And his game improved last year. There's no doubt about it. And he had a lot of success, both, you know, with the World Juniors and just on the team itself, going to the AHL All-Star game. But the fact is that there's a big aspect of the game, and it's defensive, that, you know, he's still working on and learning, and that's not a bad thing. I don't say that negatively. I say that simply as a young player who's learning. I think Kyle Connor, as to Ezzy's point, and if you haven't read Ezzy's article, we'll tweet out a link to it. It's really good about breaking down what the Jets roster could end up looking
right.
Like. It's very good, honestly.
Ezzy took a stab at the Jets' projected lines for the upcoming
2017-18 season. He did lines, D-pairing, and goalies. It was really good. But he talked about that aspect of whether, you know, a guy like Jack Roslovic could make the lineup, but most likely had a Kyle Connor slotted in there. And I agree with you, as like, I watched Kyle Connor, especially in that second half of his first, you know, that AHL season, he was unbelievable. And his shot was great, and he was doing the defensive things that he needed to do and using his speed. So I think it's a lot more likely that you'll see a Kyle Connor than you would a Jack Roslovic.
And Dave, it's mid-July, so we have no idea what the lines are going to be. We won't know what the lines are going to be in September.
That's why we call it prognostication.
Right? So, I mean, nobody expected Josh Morrissey to emerge as the team's top left-side defenseman. And as far as I'm concerned, he is. So we all expected Josh Morrissey to have a good rookie season, but maybe not as good of a rookie season as he had, right? Maybe
check the tape. I believe I said he would be the top pairing left side. No, I'm just kidding.
it's a good problem for the Jets to have, is what they have right now. And I think that
if Nick Petan, Drew, and Brandon Tanev can't crack your lineup because you have other better players on your fourth line, that's a good thing.
Well, Nick Petan especially, is they've got to figure out what to do because they cannot keep him as a 13th forward. It's just his development is just wasting away.
Well, he could be the number one center, number two center for the Moose.
He should be. Like, I mean, to me, you know, similar to thrusting Connor Hellebuck into a role he probably wasn't suited for last year, or at least maybe not having the appropriate veteran goalie with him last year, Nick Petan's use was, or misuse, I should say, to me at least, was that he should have been with the Moose. I mean, he would have, think about how much better that team would have been with him there, mm-hmm. and think about how much better he would have been having, similar to what Jack Roslovic got the benefit of, similar to what Kyle Connor got the benefit of, they're the guys. I mean, that's the whole point. This is an opportunity for your young players to be the guy. And to me, Nick Petan being up with us in the press box during Jets games doesn't benefit.
Many unanswered questions that will become clearer as the training camp approaches at the beginning of September. When we come back, we discuss Connor Hellebuck, his contract demands. What can he hope to make on his second contract with the Winnipeg Jets? The RFA goaltender continues to sit and wait for the new deal to come to effect. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's up next on TSN 1290. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and it's brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Scott Burnside. Scott is the senior digital correspondent for the Dallas Stars. Scott, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. It seems almost like the dog days of summer, but I think it will... It won't be very long until we're pining for training camp. I think that's just the way the hockey offseason goes.
You know what, Scott? We were talking about that earlier in the week off air. We were sitting around and having a beverage or two. And, you know, before you know it, we will be, you know, right after Labor Day and the beginning of training camp and everything like that. And we'll be in the heart of the season before we know it. And obviously, Scott, you're now with the Dallas Stars organization. And there's probably hasn't been a team that's been more active this offseason in terms of turning over their roster and bringing in new bodies than the Dallas Stars. Obviously, it was a disappointing season last year, not making the playoffs. But before we get to the changes on the ice, I want to start with the changes behind the bench. Is it possible that the biggest acquisition of all that the Dallas Stars have made this offseason is head coach Ken Hitchcock?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can certainly make the argument that Ken Hitchcock becomes the single most important piece that's been added in the offseason. And I was in Dallas last week for the development camp and spent some time, you know, chatting with Ken Hitchcock and his coaching staff. But, you know, when you have so many moving parts that have been added and you've got a coach who really, now he knows a lot of the players, both from his work internationally, coaching, being part of Team Canada coaching staff. So he's familiar with Jamie Benn and he knows some of the players, obviously from coaching against them for years. But I know Ken Hitchcock's, I think, main goal is once training camp starts is that he's going to be taking a really close look at the players, their personalities, trying to get to know them, forge a connection with them, as opposed to, you know, some coaches at training camp, it's about the drills, you got a lot of players, and I know that Ken Hitchcock and his staff were working to try and get all that kind of stuff in place before camp opens in the middle of September, so that they can, you know, really sort of get to the heart of who the players are, what the best fit is, because I think that's the real challenge for Ken Hitchcock and his staff. Is when you've got, you know, four significant pieces in terms of goaltending with Ben Bishop and Mark Bethot on the blue line, and then adding Martin Hansel and Alexander Radulov up front, you've got to make sure you get them in the right spot as quickly as possible to get off to a good start, which I think is important for a team. As you've noted, that was a 30-point drop in the standings year over year, 2 years to last year. So I think it'll be interesting to see how quickly Ken Hitchcock can find a groove and find some chemistry within within the group, especially integrating such important new pieces to the lineup.
Scott, you just mentioned Ben Bishop. Is the expectation that Ben Bishop is going to play 60 or 65 games? We know that Ken Hitchcock isn't afraid to play a goaltender a lot, or is that something that with Kari Lehtinen being the experienced backup, you know that maybe not necessarily Ben Bishop has to play that many games?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a set number that they're looking at. I think a lot will be determined by the schedule, obviously. Assuming that Ben Bishop stays healthy, and that's, you know, people I think have, there's a bit of a misnomer, Ben Bishop lacks durability or whatever, and certainly the fact that he was injured in the Stanley Cup, the start of the Stanley Cup final in 15, start of the Eastern Conference final a year later in 16, but you look at his numbers, he's played a lot during the regular season, his numbers are incredible, really, two-time Vezina Trophy finalist, so I don't think it's a question of, well, Ben Bishop has to play 65 games for the Dallas Stars to be comfortably in a playoff spot or to win the Central. I don't think it has to be that way. I think what you're going to see with both Ben Bishop and Kari Lehtinen is that they should thrive, as most goaltenders do, playing under Ken Hitchcock's system. And Rick Wilson will look after the defense. But this should be a team that is much, much better defensively, scheme-wise, and in terms of getting the puck out of their own zone. There should be far less pressure on the goaltenders, whether it's Kari Lehtinen or Ben Bishop, than there has been in Dallas the last two or three years. So, and I think it's going to be interesting for Kari Lehtinen. He's in a contract year, certainly will play a complementary role to Ben Bishop. There's no question that Ben Bishop's the man. But I do know that if you look at teams that have had success, and even the workhorse goaltenders in the NHL, whether it's Henrik Lundqvist, you look at the work that Antti Raanta did there, you look at Corey Crawford in Chicago, and Scott Darling, both Darling and Antti Raanta turned their backup roles with premier goaltenders into full-time jobs this past summer. Kari Lehtinen will have an opportunity to play. I know as long as he is solid, and the Stars continue to get quality starts from him, I don't think Ken Hitchcock will be afraid at all to up the workload for Kari Lehtinen, and I think that helps the team as you head down the stretch and into what should be a playoff berth, I would think, for the Dallas Stars next spring, all things being equal. So, but it is going to be interesting to see how Ken Hitchcock handles that veteran goaltending duo, but it's an important year for Kari Lehtinen, just as it is for Ben Bishop, coming into his first year in Dallas with a new six-year contract.
Well, Scott, springboarding off the Stars' current goaltenders and looking towards the future, you wrote an interesting column about the future of the crease for Dallas, and let's talk about, or can you talk a little bit about how important that is, how much of a focus that's become for this staff of having a goaltender that they can kind of, develop on their own and have in their system?
Yeah, I know, and certainly, I think it's fair to say when you look at the recent history, you go back 10 or 15 years with the Dallas Stars, they haven't been a team that has drafted and developed homegrown goaltending with any level of success. You have to go back to Marty Turco, drafted in 1994. Marty Turco is the last true homegrown everyday goaltender for the Dallas Stars. And that doesn't mean they haven't had good goaltending in between, but it certainly is a hole in their development plan. And if you go back to the draft in Chicago in June, and the fact that Jim Neal, the GM, managed to keep the number three pick and pick Miro Hiskinen, I always get that mixed up, at number three spot, the defenseman, but also then turned a first-round pick that they'd acquired from Anaheim in the Patrick Eaves deal, traded from 29 to 26 to get Jake Oettinger, the first goalie taken in the draft. And it's incredible when you start to talk around the NHL scouts and talent evaluators. They love this kid, and he is, had a very nice development camp, and it's clearly an important part of the future moving forward. But there are three or four young goaltenders in the star system. I know in talking to goaltending coach Jeff Reese and Jim Bedard, who came over and will handle the developmental end for goaltenders after spending a long time in Detroit with the Red Wings, they really like the group of young goaltenders that there is the various stages. There are a couple playing college hockey next year. Marcus Rousseau will be back, hoping to play in the Finnish Elite League. Lena Bowe, who will be looking for playing time in the American Hockey League. But I think there is a real sense of optimism that there is some homegrown goaltending talent coming forward, and we'll be able to. There's no need to rush him with Ben Bishop on the six-year deal. So I think more optimism around that position in Dallas Stars organization than there's been for a long time.
Scott Burnside joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott is the senior digital correspondent with the Dallas Stars. Scott, on the back end, the big acquisition this offseason was Mark Mathot. The Stars got him from Vegas, the Vegas Golden Knights, after he was acquired, of course, in the expansion draft by the Golden Knights. Is there a feeling, and I know Dan Hamhuis was there last year as sort of the veteran presence on the back end for the Stars, was there a feeling that maybe they still were a little too young, even with Hamhuis's presence, and that's why they needed to go out and get a veteran defenseman, a solid veteran defenseman like Mark Mathot? We saw how good he was with Erik Karlsson, and we know the Stars, John Klingberg especially, have a, he's an offensively minded defenseman first and foremost.
Yeah, there's no question that outside of shoring up the goaltending, and there was no question that that was priority one, given the goaltending woes for the Dallas Stars the last couple of years, and certainly last year specifically. But getting a top four left-handed shot defenseman was paramount for Jim Neal. And you mentioned John Klingberg, terrific skill set, high-end right-handed shot, skates very well. Really sort of made an immediate impact after coming up to the Dallas Stars a couple of years ago in his first taste of NHL hockey, but really hit a wall last year, like a lot of players, a very difficult season for the Stars and a difficult season for John Klingberg. So I think the idea, it'll be interesting because now the pressure is on both Mark Mathot and John Klingberg to sort of recreate the magic that we saw in Ottawa. And this isn't to compare John Klingberg to Erik Karlsson, right? I mean, Erik Karlsson, for my money, should have won the Norris this year. I think is the most dynamic defenseman in the NHL. It's not going out on much of a limb to say that. And to suggest that Klingberg can become that, I think, is a bit of a stretch. But I think what Mark Mathot will do is help to teach John Klingberg to play a full NHL game. He will, his presence will allow Klingberg maybe to take some chances without being penalized with goals scored against every time that he gets caught up ice or anything like that. So I think it's an important position for Mark Mathot to be a veteran presence who can teach a guy like John Klingberg the ins and outs of being a complete NHL defenseman. It's an important year for John Klingberg. Julius Honk is another guy who plays on the right side who may get a chance to play some with Mark Mathot as well. But I know that Mark Mathot is going to be counted on to play a lot of minutes. He'll play against good opposition. And he plays he's not going to score a lot of points, but he handles the puck better than people will give him credit for, skates very well. And I think we saw that. I thought, it was so impressive to watch what the Senators did. And it all really started with that Mathot, Erik Karlsson do on the back end as they went to the Eastern Conference Final Game 7 double overtime. So I think the expectations are very high for Mark Mathot and what he can do in stabilizing that blue line.
Scott, every time I watched the Dallas Stars last year, I was really impressed by Radek Faksa, and he signed a three-year deal earlier this week. Now that he signed that three-year deal, are the expectations going to be greater for the center?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some, a lot of excitement, I think, about Radek Faksa. And it's interesting, with Martin Hanzel being signed, it does make the center position very crowded for the Dallas Stars, and certainly lots of options and challenges, I think, for Ken Hitchcock in figuring out who's going to play where. I know that Radek Faksa is a big fan of Martin Hanzel. There is a strong connection between the two, so there is a sort of instant chemistry or a nice relationship for a veteran player like Hanzel and a young emerging two-way center like Faksa. I go back to the playoffs 2 years ago. I thought Faksa might have been one of the best stars or most consistent stars forward in their playoff years. They went two rounds. And I think there is going to be some expectation. It'll be interesting to see, does Ken Hitchcock ask Foxa to play a little bit on the wing. Someone's going to have to move over. Maybe it'll be Jason Spezza. But there is no question. The three-year deal, it's a nice cap-friendly deal. I think it's $2.2 million per year. And a chance for him to really, I think, emerge as a team leader down the middle for Ken Hitchcock. So nice complementary piece locked up for the next 3 years. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits into Ken Hitchcock's plans moving forward.
You know, Scott, we opened the segment talking about the dog days of summer, and usually once the development camp has happened, you know that you're really into it. But I want to ask you about the development camp, and what was your observation from, you know, this unique perspective that you had this season or this year?
Yeah, I haven't spent much time at development camps. It hasn't really been in my wheelhouse during my time at ESPN. And so it was interesting and got a chance to watch a lot of what unfolded with the coaches and the management team with the Dallas Stars. For me, a lot of it was the off-ice materials. You know, this was, you know, I had this conversation with Ken Hitchcock, and, you know, he admitted maybe selfishly he would have liked to have seen more evaluation, so more three-on-three, more scrimmage-type action on the ice, and maybe less on the skills development. But he admitted that was just from his purely coaching perspective. But this was not an evaluation camp. It was a development camp. You know, the staff were very clear. Listen, no one makes the Dallas Stars out of development camp. So it's about learning to be a professional hockey player. It's about learning what is expected of you from the Dallas Stars. And I thought, listening to the off-ice stuff, they had a strong military presence, former Navy SEALs, SEALs Team 6 commander came in and spoke about teamwork and leadership. There was a heavy emphasis on nutrition, heavy emphasis on preparing. Even though they had a sleep specialist come in to explain to, you know, most of these players are coming out of junior or their collegiate career, some players who played in Europe over the last couple of years, some of whom will be coming to North America to play in the American Hockey League. So for me, that was interesting to watch, you know, the educational process, and I'm really giving these young players all the tools that they should need to continue to take advantage of their own skill set. You know, everyone who comes to a development camp, they can skate, they can shoot. You know, the skill issue is different than maybe 10 or 15 years ago where you were weeding some players out. All these players come with high skill, and it's the same in every NHL camp. So for me, it was the preparation sort of mentally and off ice, how you round yourself into a professional player and learn to live as a professional hockey player. I thought that was really interesting.
Scott Burnside is the senior digital correspondent of the Dallas Stars. Scott, we tend to talk a lot about the Jets' Central Division rival, the Dallas Stars, on this program. So I'm sure we'll do this again. Enjoy your summer, and we'll touch base when the season begins.
Yep, anytime, guys.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Let's head to break. When we come back now, we'll talk about Connor Hellebuck's contract status. I got a little ahead of myself there. But Connor Hellebuck's contract status is up next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Young Michigander, played at UMass, big goalie, very, very, very big in the net. But one thing I want to see from him on a go-forward basis is his hands to be even a little bit more active. To me, his hands sometimes are a little lower. He has a lower hand position, but I think he's got all the tools to be a long-term successful goalie in the league.
That's Kevin Weeks of the NHL Network, former goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks, the New York Rangers. Was he with the Kings also? I'm trying to remember where else Kevin Weeks played. Maybe the Hurricanes, if I recall correctly? Anyways, that's Kevin Weeks talking about Winnipeg Jets goaltender Connor Hellebuck. He is, the last of the Winnipeg Jets regulars, let's say J.C. LaPon, no offense, who is still without a contract at this point in time. He's a restricted free agent.
Weeks played for the Devils, too.
The Devils, too. Sorry, Ezzy, I apologize immensely for forgetting about your New Jersey Devils. But Hellebuck, the last of the Winnipeg Jets regulars to be without a contract. He's an RFA. Right now, he has filed for salary arbitration. Of course, the hope is that it never usually gets to that point in time and that the two sides can come to an agreement before the hearing is set to begin. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, perhaps you're thinking about you want to see what the House of A softball jerseys look like that we got from Keener Jerseys. You can do that. Send us an email. We'll show you what the picture. We'll show you what the jerseys look like. Or you can just check them out online, keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. I guess it's not new anymore. It's been a couple years now. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Keener Jerseys, tell them Illegal Curve sent you. So, Connor Hellebuck, as I mentioned, boys, out without a contract. He's coming off of his entry-level deal. We know, you know, it was an up-and-down season for Connor Hellebuck. There was some good. There was, you know, some good. There was some bad. And the Jets went out and signed Steve Mason to a two-year contract on July 1st to be either the 1A, the 1B, a timeshare. We're not 100% sure how that situation is going to play itself out. What can Connor Hellebuck realistically expect in terms of a new contract from the Winnipeg Jets? And do you think that he's going to be looking for a three-year deal? Or is he going to be more interested in a, you know, one-year contract to maybe prove himself a little bit more than he did last year? How do you think that this negotiation is going to play out?
I have no idea what Connor Hellebuck is looking for, Drew. I would imagine he's going to get a two- or three-year deal. And I don't think this is going to go to arbitration. We'll see. 24 of the 25 possible arbitration cases were settled before going to a hearing. So it's very unlikely that this does go to arbitration, but it depends if the two sides are far apart. And you mentioned Connor Hellebuck. I do think Steve Mason will start more games than Connor Hellebuck this year. And of course, it remains to be seen. But I don't think you bring in a goalie like Steve Mason, who's played 55-plus games many times in his career, to play 20 to 30 games. So I think Connor Hellebuck's probably going to be around 30 to 35 games, and I think when you're talking about Steve Mason, he'll be around 50 to 55 games, maybe even closer to 60. But back to Hellebuck, I think when you're looking at comparables, I mean, it's tough to find an exact comparable for a goalie. I don't think Matt Murray is a good comparable. He has two Stanley Cups.
Right, but he didn't have two Stanley Cups when he signed that contract extension. He only had the one Stanley Cup. They signed this. And
well, Hellebuck has none.
I know. And Matt Murray, but so you know that that's the absolute. He's not going to get more than Matt Murray. Matt Murray signed a three-year $11.25 million contract, and that was going to take effect. That's his second contract that would take effect after the entry level deal expired, which it has. So you know that Connor Hellebuck can't ask for Matt Murray money, because that would just be unreasonable, because like you said, Matt Murray is a better goaltender than Connor Hellebuck is right now. But then you look at the other guys who are sort of young goaltenders in the NHL coming off of their entry level deal, and the two that jumped to my mind, one is Andrei Vasilevsky of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who is now the number one goalie for the Lightning. And he signed a three-year, $10.5 million contract. And I'm thinking even that's probably still more, and that's $3.5 million a year. That's probably more than Hellebuck can ask for as well.
I would imagine Hellebuck, Drew, is going to be between $2.5 and $3 million.
Well, so you look at another comparable, and that's John Gibson. John Gibson of the Anaheim Ducks signed a three-year, $6.9 million contract. So that's just, you know, $2.3 million per season for John Gibson. I think the Jets would say, look, Connor, you're not as good as John Gibson is right now. I think even that is probably, if the Jets offered Connor Hellebuck the quote-unquote John Gibson contract, 3 years, $6.9 million, I think that's a reasonable number, maybe even on the high end of a reasonable number for Hellebuck to accept.
Right, and you know, that's what I said, around $2.5 million, 2.3. I mean, I'm not a salary cap guy, Drew, so I mean you can ask someone else for the exact $100,000 increments, but when you're talking about Connor Hellebuck, you're talking about a guy who is most likely going to play backup role this year, and that's because you've brought in Steve Mason, a guy who has 10 years of NHL experience. So 2 or 3 years seems reasonable for Connor Hellebuck. Nobody's expecting the Jets to sign Hellebuck to 4 or 5 years. And that's because you don't know what you have yet, guys. I mean, Hellebuck played 56 games last year, but the reality is you don't know if he is your future number one goaltender. You want him to be your future number one goaltender, so you sign him to a 2 or 3 year deal, and then after that, once he's proved himself, then you sign him to a longer-term contract if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, and I think from the Jets' perspective, if you think about it, from both sides, I think they'll probably want to do a prove-me sort of bridge 2-year deal, and then essentially that kind of falls along the same lines of, you know, the Steve Mason contract of 2 years. And then realistically, you know, at that point, you're going to have an Eric Comrie who potentially could be knocking on the door based on whatever he does within the AHL framework. So, you know, from a Jets' perspective, you have it really does give you good options. Now, Connor Hellebuyck, like you guys have talked about, doesn't have a tremendous amount of leverage in this situation. So, you know, he obviously filed for arbitration. But the fact is, I could very easily see it coming in at a two-year deal kind of thing just to give him that opportunity. But the reality is, knowing that he's probably going to back up Mason. But again, if Mason doesn't do what the Jets need him to do, i.e. get them into the playoffs, then, you know, that allows Connor Hellebuyck to kind of emerge, be a solid backup, and then really take over that role in the after 2 years.
You know, I agree that I think Mason's going to get the majority of the opportunities to start. But that's not to say that I couldn't see Hellebuyck also maybe stealing. I mean, stealing the job is an overstatement, but stealing more games than we are initially suspecting today, you know, July 15th. I mean, if Hellebuyck plays well, I don't think the Jets are going to be afraid to run him out there more than we are currently expecting.
Well, what we're currently expecting, I mean, I said it, 30 to 35 games, but I mean, 40 games. I mean, there's no point in really, you know, fixating on the amount of starts. The reality is they brought in Steve Mason to be the number one goaltender.
You don't pay someone $4.1 million and then say, okay, well, we're cool letting you be the backup.
Well, then does Connor Hellebuyck should he expect backup money on this next contract?
Well, I don't think you're expecting backup money because you're a young goaltender. So you don't necessarily have to label it a backup goaltender money. The reality is he's only played one full year with the Jets. He's played under 100 games at the National Hockey League level. He can't command Matt Murray money.
No, Matt Murray, but can he even command?
He can't command a five-year contract because he hasn't proven himself.
Can he even command John Gibson money? Or is he more looking at, I mean, Michael Hutchinson is still on the books for $1.1 million this year.
No,
I mean, is he $1.5 million?
I'd say he's closer to John Gibson than he is to Michael Hutchinson. Because, again, you have to understand, from the Jets' perspective, they only have Mason for 2 years. And Connor Hellebuyck is a very good young goaltender who has a lot of development still ahead of him. And once he's kind of finished that, again, what your hope is that this is going to be your goaltender for 10 years. So the fact is you can't really go in there and say we're only offering you like $1 million for the next couple of seasons, and you're not going to insult him and put him into a bad framework and then really kind of leave him with a sour taste because, of course, you're the team, you have the leverage. But at the same time, you're not – he hasn't, to Ezzie's point, you haven't done what you need to do to command that the term or the big money. So you're going to have to accept most likely some sort of bridge deal, which gives you a two-year window. And if you fulfill like an anti-Ranta role where you're behind a Henrik Lundqvist and you're playing extremely well, and that's not a bad thing. You know what I mean? Because let's be realistic. What did the Jets not have this year that they needed? It wasn't on Connor Hellebuyck. It was on the fact that they didn't have a backup that could get them 10, 15 wins. So when it counted, I should say. So the fact of the matter is, if Connor Hellebuyck does what he needs to do, keeps himself, you know, in shape, works on his techniques, which we saw him do, as he talked about in one of our earlier shows last month, about how Connor Hellebuyck was going out west and learning some new techniques. If he does that, if he continues to develop, then he can command big money. So you go in there, you take that two-year deal, you take the money, you know, whatever, again, his agent is going to negotiate. And the fact is you'll end up in a place in 2 years that you want to be if everything progresses the way it needs to.
The Carolina Hurricanes signed a young defenseman to a seven-year contract. We talk about that contract and the ramifications it has on Jacob Trouba. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Absolutely. Congrats to Jacob Slavin. And when you talked about that, much earned. He put in the time. He put in his work. He's exceeded a lot of expectations. And for a lot of the folks that are able to watch the Canes down in Raleighwood on a regular basis, it comes as no surprise to you. For a lot of the other NHL that hasn't been paying attention, maybe it's a bit surprising. Not for me, not for us. We think this is a great signing, great term, great value, and congrats to him. It's something that he's worked exceptionally hard for.
Jacob Slavin of the Carolina Hurricanes puts his name on a new seven-year $37.1 million contract. It's an average annual value of $5.3 million. A nice payday for the young defenseman of the Carolina Hurricanes. Just turning 24 this coming May. So 23 right now, turns 24 just at the end of the 2017-18 season. A former fourth round pick of the Hurricanes. Talk about that contract and the impact it has on Jacob Trouba and potentially his ask if he is interested in re-signing here in Winnipeg. Should mention, of course, though, that this segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So you heard Kevin Weeks in that clip coming back from break talk about how Slavin or Slavin, depending on your choice of pronunciation, sort of an under-the-radar defenseman. And the Carolina Hurricanes really don't get a lot of national attention. We only see them twice per season, once here in Winnipeg and once down in Raleigh. But for people who do keep an eye on the Hurricanes, they know just how good this defenseman is becoming. And sort of unexpectedly, given that he is a fourth-round pick, of course, only completed his second full season this past year. So this new contract extension doesn't kick in until after the 2017-18 season, as he's still playing on his entry-level deal. Had 34 points in 82 games for the Hurricanes last year. You can compare that with Trouba, who had 33 points in 60 games. Not exact comparables, of course, because Trouba's coming off of his second contract after this coming season. But some food for thought as maybe where Trouba's representation and Trouba's camp says, this is what Slavin's getting. You're going to have to give me more than Slavin's getting on my third contract.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. And I've watched Jacob Slavin a little bit, Slavin, I should say, with the Carolina Hurricanes. And he's a good defenseman, and you're right. He's only played 2 years in the NHL as opposed to Trouba, who's played 4 years in the NHL. I still think Morgan Rielly is the best comparable for Jacob Trouba. He signed an AAV of $5 million a year after his entry-level deal. But when you're talking about Jacob Slavin, I mean, for this Carolina Hurricanes team, they have made all of the right moves, and they acquired Scott Darling to solidify their goaltending. They went out and they acquired Trevor Van Riemsdyk. They acquired Marcus Kruger from the Vegas Golden Knights. I really like what they're doing there, and you've got some good defensemen in the system when you're talking about Hayden Fleury and Jake Bean, and you've got a really good group of young forwards there with Elias Lindholm and Sebastian Aho. We can go on and on and on. But when you're talking about Slavin's contract in relation to Jacob Trouba, Drew, mm-hmm. if you're Jacob Trouba's camp, absolutely, when you look at what he got as far as an average annual value goes, you say, well, my client has played more years in the NHL, and he can easily do what Jacob Slavin does. So I think that Jacob Trouba, this is my own personal belief, I think that he could easily command $6 million a year. And you might say that that's a little bit high for a guy like Jacob Trouba, but for me, he's the best defenseman on the Jets. And if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I want to sign him to a 7-year deal, and I'm prepared to give him $6 million a year.
Yeah, you back up that dump truck for Jacob Trouba, and it's all about whether he wants to be here. I mean, obviously, he rescinded his trade request last year, and so, you know, and he played a very good, you know, he was a catalyst for the Jets for a lot of what they were able to do. And we see that, and, you know, when you watch him and you see his work ethic and you see the things he does, you know that Jacob Trouba is a player that you want to build a young, you know, your defensive core around. You really can't afford not to have a Jacob Trouba in the lineup, especially with the health question marks that are surrounding players like, Tyler Myers and Tobias Enstrom. So, you know, sure, you've got Josh Morrissey and you've got Dustin Byfuglien, who's been resilient. But the fact is that you need Jacob Trouba in your top pairing for years to come.
And Dave, you have so much invested in him. He's 23 years old. He was your second ever first round draft pick. How do you replace Jacob Trouba in your lineup? You can't. There is no way to replace him in your lineup. And last year, he was an absolute beast in the second half of the season. He was playing power play. He was playing penalty kill. I mean, he was excellent, and he struggled when he came back. He missed the first 15 to 20 games of the year with that contract situation. And, you know, the first 10 to 20 games, I would say he wasn't excellent, but the last 30 to 40 games, I mean, he was playing 25 plus minutes a game, and I just don't think you can afford not to keep him and sign him long term. Now, whether or not he wants to sign that contract, none of us in this room know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the big question mark. But I think at this,
you know, hold on, I'm getting a text from Jacob Trouba. He said,
but with Slavin signing this contract, the $5.3 million, and I think that it's just clear that, you know, Trouba, who would hit unrestricted free agency only, you know, another 2 years from now after this contract expires, it means that his next contract, if it's with the Winnipeg Jets, he's clear and he's going to ask for at least something that starts with a $6 million and might be even closer to $7 million.
Well, yeah, I have no idea. He's going to ask for probably the most that he can ask within reason. I don't think Jacob Trouba's camp is going to ask for $10 million a year, Drew. But if you're asking me, yes, you should pay him $6 million a year because he is your best defenseman. And you can use comparables, and Morgan Rielly is the one I would use, both drafted in the same year. Morgan Rielly is a top-pairing defenseman for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The difference between Morgan Rielly and Jacob Trouba is that Morgan Rielly signed his long-term deal after his entry-level deal,
right,
as opposed to Trouba, who signed the bridge contract.
And that's why it's going to cost the Jets more,
right,
for, you know, because you're buying out more. If you buy out, if it's a seven-year deal for Trouba, you're buying out five unrestricted free agency years, which means those are more expensive years than RFA years.
And also, the first year of the long-term contract is going to kick in 2 years after Morgan Rielly's contract, so that value is going to go up.
Right.
So I think it'll probably be around $6 million. I haven't, you know, crunched the numbers or anything like that, but I think it's realistic to expect Jacob Trouba's next contract to be 6 or 7 years and in that $6 million range.
And if he chooses not to sign this offseason and maybe even has a better year than he did last year, if his numbers continue to grow, I mean, last year's numbers were 33 points in 60 games, not unreasonable that could be up to 40 or 45 points if he's able to play a full season. Well, that contract number might be getting even inching closer to $7 million per season.
And the big issue with Jacob Trouba's camp was usage. And he played the right side last year. Mm-hmm. He played on the top power play unit, or at the very least the second power play unit. And I mean, his numbers reflected the playing time. He played more last year than he'd ever played. So there's no issue with that. The question is, does he want to stay in Winnipeg, really?
Yeah, well, and that's the big unknown. And that's the big, you know, you hope that he would give a truthful answer to the Jets team when they're negotiating this contract. You know, are you interested in being here? Because if the answer is no, well, then the Jets know that one of their priorities really this season, well,
then they have to trade him.
Is to trade him.
Yeah.
I mean, they still control his rights as an RFA next year, but, you know, every year you go further down the road, closer to free agency, you know that you're going to lose the guy. So that's the big unknown, of course. I think the Jets are prepared to pay him. I don't think the dollar value will end up being a overwhelmingly difficult debate. I think the Jets know what he's worth. The question, of course, is one of, does Jacob Trouba want to spend the next 6, 7, 8 years here in Winnipeg? And that's the big unknown as we continue to talk about his future here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Drew. I think that's the biggest question mark surrounding all of these negotiations is whether he'll stay. And if he does, then like I said, they'll back up the truck and they'll pay him the money that he's entitled to. And because as touched on, and he's 100% right, you can't afford to lose your you know, second ever first round pick, who's as pivotal to this team as Jacob Trouba is.
When we come back, Ezzy sat down with Craig Custance of The Athletic in Detroit to talk about the Red Wings offseason. We're going to play that interview for you next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
What about Karen?
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Yesterday afternoon, Ezra Ginsberg sat down with Craig Custance. Craig is the editor-in-chief and NHL insider of The Athletic in Detroit. This is the interview that Ezzy conducted with Craig Custance yesterday.
Craig, first off, how are you enjoying the new gig?
It's great. It's I got to say, transitioning from ESPN to The Athletic, the biggest challenge for me has been how much work it's been this time of year. I mean, like, for years I'd been kind of in that crew of hockey writers where you basically killed yourself during the playoffs, on the road the whole time for four rounds. Then it was the draft, then it was free agency. And then just about on July 3rd, you would be able to send out a tweet from a cottage or something saying, see you guys in September. But, you know, launching this new business basically means that is not the reality right now, but it's been a lot of fun, really gratifying work.
How important was it for you to accept a position in your home state?
That was certainly part of the appeal. There was a couple of things. I mean, it was definitely a change in what I'm doing because I'm used to writing nationally. So in terms of the content I'm producing, it's been all Red Wings right now, and that's going to change kind of down the line when we launch more of a national presence on The Athletic. But what really appealed to me was being able to build a team in Detroit and hire writers. And you know, as a journalist, you kind of do this anyways over beers. You say, hey, if you were putting together a team of writers, who would it be in hockey and football and whatever? And I'm basically been living that where it's like, okay, who is the guy or who is the woman who I would like to cover the University of Michigan's football team? And then it's, okay, I'm going to call that person and see if they'll do it. And it's been a lot of fun.
Craig, you mentioned the Red Wings, and we want to get right into the Red Wings, including restricted free agent Thomas Tatar, who's still without a contract. Do you believe that Thomas Tatar is headed for arbitration, or do you think the Red Wings are going to be able to lock him up to a long-term deal?
Yeah, here's what I think on that one. Knowing this organization pretty well and knowing their history, I want to say their last person to actually get to arbitration was Ray Shepard back in the mid-90s. So Ken Holland, his MO certainly is to get these deals done before it gets into the hands of the arbitrator. But here's, you know, I think this is an interesting one because the Red Wings they don't have a ton of cap flexibility, in part because of bad long-term contracts given out by the current management. And, you know, guys like Justin Abdelkader and Jonathan Erickson and some of these players got long-term deals that have squeezed the team a little bit. And it may come at the cost of Tomas Tatar being part of the long-term solution here. And when you look at where the Red Wings are as an organization, I don't think this – I mean, this is maybe a borderline playoff team, depending on how much of the Kool-Aid you're drinking in Detroit. And so maybe the best thing for the kind of the long-term plans of the organization is a one-year deal that's settled through arbitration, because then at the very least you can leave the option of trading him at the deadline if things really go sideways this season.
We're joined by Craig Custance, editor-in-chief for The Athletic Detroit on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Craig, you recently wrote a really good article talking about the turning point for the Red Wings rebuild, depending heavily on the development of the team's young defensemen. How would you rate the current crop of D prospects for the Wings?
Yeah, they have some interesting prospects on defense. And it's hard to really rate them because they haven't used any of their highest picks really on deep. Like if you look at their pick this year, they were number 9 overall. They took the big center Rasmussen because I really think center was a position they had to address. And then they went D heavy the rest of the draft. So to me, the most fascinating guy is Dennis Chalowski, who I wrote about yesterday, who was their first round pick last year. And in Detroit, there's a little bit of angst over him because he was the pick they picked at number 20. And the reason they were picking at number 20 is because they traded out of the 16th spot with the Arizona Coyotes, who took Jacob Chychrun, who, as you know, played all last year in the NHL and looked really good as a teenager in the NHL. And the Red Wings did that essentially because they wanted to open up cap space. That was the adaptive deal. They picked up a second round pick and picked up the Hrana kid, who's really, I like him a lot, another young defenseman. He's a Finnish defenseman. But I think the fascinating thing is there's going to always be these comparisons between Chalowski and Chychrun. And it's, you know, fair or not. I mean, Chalowski's probably a much bigger project. He's not going to be ready for at least another year, year and a half, maybe 2 years. Great skater, but still has a lot to work on. And so, like, he's the guy with probably the highest upside of the group.
Craig, this is going back nearly a month now, but how surprised were you that the Red Wings protected Jimmy Howard over Peter Mrazek in the expansion draft?
Well, that was a fun one for me because that was right when we launched The Athletic Detroit, and it was one of the first stories that I really got to dive into locally and probably wouldn't have covered it that much nationally. Maybe would have made a note and said, no, that was kind of interesting by the Red Wings. But I do remember being surprised that that was the decision, and spent a lot of time reporting it out and why that was the decision and talking not only to people with the organization, but outside the organization and what's the perception, you know, of the Detroit Red Wings goalies and Peter Mrazek. And really, first of all, Peter Mrazek was awful this year. Like you look at his numbers, his save percentage was horrible, you know, well below the league average. But that's fine. He's still the younger goalie. You're rebuilding team. You protect that guy. What I found interesting was he's got a reputation around the league as a guy who's got a lot of confidence but doesn't always put in the work. And I think there was some frustration with the Red Wings organization in that when things went bad with Jimmy Howard, he dug in and put in the work and turned it around. When things went bad with Peter Mrazek, they didn't necessarily see the same thing. And I think this ended up being a message to Mrazek that he was exposed, he wasn't selected, not a single team traded for him, and now he goes back to Detroit. And if there was some sort of issue there, kind of getting a message through to him, I think that should be changed at this point.
Craig, you mentioned some of the long-term contracts that Ken Holland has signed in the last couple of years. Aside from signing his own RFAs, including Thomas Tatar, do you expect Ken Holland to make any significant moves from now until training camp?
I don't, only because I think they're kind of hamstrung. Like I think this is a team that would love to add a good young defenseman into their top four because of the D-men we were talking about. None of those guys are really ready. Like they're all a year or two away. And so they have a very, you know, an old and at times slow and not really good at transitioning the puck defense, which isn't a combination you want. So I think they would like to add a good young defenseman. The problem is who are you going to move? And really nobody's banging down the doors to trade for, you know, Gus Nyquist or Abdelkader or any of these other players. Like if they're going to move somebody, teams are going to want Dylan Larkin or Anthony Mantha. And those are the players that they want to build around as part of this rebuild. So I think they may have to kind of be content going into training camp with the roster they have. And then while at the same time trying to see if there's a team that's willing to move a young D.
Craig, you mentioned Anthony Mantha and Dylan Larkin. Considering that the Red Wings are an outside shot to make the playoffs, what are the expectations for those two young players next year?
Yeah, I mean, they've got to take a step forward. And I know there was some disappointment in Detroit about Dylan Larkin's sophomore season after such a promising debut. And I think a lot of that stemmed from the league making an adjustment to him. I mean, if you watch Dylan Larkin play, he has great speed. And teams basically were kind of keeping him to the outside and letting him skate himself in circles at times. And I think there was an adjustment into how teams played Dylan Larkin. I think he now has to kind of make that adjustment back. And the other challenge with him is he had a lot of success as a rookie on the wing. The Red Wings project him as a center. Really, if this rebuild's going to work effectively in Detroit, they need him to be a centerman and build around him and Rasmussen down the middle. And so that's going to be the key this year is can he play center for a full season and do it well? And in terms of Anthony Mantha, I think he's interesting because I think internally they're like, boy, what if this guy, we ended up hitting a home run with this guy and he's a young Rick Nash or something, just a big body on the wing who can score goals. We saw him really show that ability off last year and in Detroit. And I think he's a bit of a wild card because I'm not sure anybody really knows how high his ceiling is right now.
There have been reports that the Red Wings might bring back Thomas Vanek after trading him prior to the deadline last year. Do you think that would be a wise
yeah.
decision?
I don't know. The only thing you could convince me that would be a good idea is if you've traded, let's say, Nyquist or something for a help on defense, and you want to do Thomas Vanek to a one-year deal and spin him at the deadline again and get another third-round pick. Like that would be the only scenario where I would see a Vanek signing making any sense. Because really, right now, when they have to sign Athanasiou, which will be a 1 or 2 year bridge deal. He doesn't have any arb rights. They have to sign Tomas Tatar. So they're going to be squeezed. Like that'll run them right out of cap space. So I don't know what that Vanek number looks like. I don't know how you fit him in. And really, I'm not the best young prospects in the organization are on the wing. Those are the guys that are closest to NHL ready. I'm not sure why you would block that unless you had thoughts of spinning him at the deadline.
Craig, I know it doesn't officially open until September, but have you had a chance to see the new Little Caesars Arena? And what are your thoughts on that controversial logo on the roof?
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I'm a capitalist. Like, you put a logo, that's fine. You make some money there. But it's funny because they kind of snuck that through. When they first launched, I remember they sent out plans and designs, and you saw the pictures, and it was this really cool, like, LED light display of different logos changing. And I think that's why the fans are frustrated. They had visions of one thing, and all of a sudden now it looks like the top of a pizza box. And I can see where that probably isn't ideal. But I mean, that's life when you pay millions of dollars to sponsor it. I have not been inside, and I'm eager to get inside. I only have seen it from the outside and just been out of town when they were offering up tours and stuff. But I am excited to get in there. Because I can tell you, years of working in Joe Louis Arena, as cool as that old barn was, it wasn't the ideal working conditions from the media's point of view.
Craig, final question for you here. Goaltender Keith Pietrangelo, he was in development camp. He was taken in the third round of the past draft. Just how high are the Red Wings on this goalie prospect?
They really like him. And I, you know, I'm not necessarily a prospect guy, or I wasn't nationally. At ESPN, I kind of let Corey Fromman do the heavy lifting there. So I didn't know a ton about him when they drafted him. And he, I mean, he looked really good in the development camp they just had last week in Traverse City. And you don't want to judge anybody on a kind of a friendly development camp. But he's absolutely huge. He has some athleticism, seems like a confident kid. You know, when you talk to them, my criticism of the Red Wings draft, I thought they were way too conservative. And this is a team that's trying to rebuild without completely tanking. And so I thought they should have taken a few more swings for the fences with their picks. I thought they were really conservative with their draft picks. And I thought this one pick in the third round and the goalie was the exception. I thought they did take a swing there. And I mean, who knows? Goalies, I can't tell you who's going to be good in goal at the NHL level this year, because you just never know from a year to year, especially when you're talking about teenagers. But he sure looked like he has all the pieces there to be an NHL starter.
Craig Custance is the editor-in-chief of The Athletic Detroit. He was also one of the first ever guests on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show about 8 years ago. Craig, thanks very much for your time today, and enjoy the rest of your summer.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
Right. Thanks a lot, Craig.
In a perfect situation for him in Florida. He had a young Barkov, a young Huberdeau, and for some reason Florida thinks the shelf life is up on that mentoring or that relationship. And speed is the key thing. He's so smart down low, below the tops of the circles. He can play with anyone in the world. The problem is, that's only a portion of the hockey rink right now. And to get the rest of it done, I think it may have expired for Jágr. He may get a shot somewhere. It'd be very selective, and it would have to be a specific situation, as it was with the two young kids that he really mentored so well in Florida.
TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin giving his thoughts about Jaromir Jágr. We know his time has come to an end with the Florida Panthers. The question this segment will be, where will Jágr, if anywhere, where will he find a new home? Same question goes for both Shane Doan and Jerome Iginla, two other legendary players cast adrift by their most recent teams. And in the case of Shane Doan, the only team he has ever known, the Arizona Coyotes. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Check out the newly renovated store that just happened over the past week or 10 days. Some new renovations, new floors in at Bernstein's Deli. Ezzy, you were there. You checked it out. I'm going tomorrow to check it out. So be sure to check out the new and improved Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall.
Yeah, Drew, I was there on Thursday.
Yes.
With Naomi. And
yes.
I actually ate an Illegal Curve sandwich off the floor.
Off the floor. The floors are that clean yeah. and that new. You
yeah,
can
I wanted to test them out, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there's no better chance to eat a sandwich off the floor than when they're brand new,
it's
right?
It's true, yes.
Yeah.
That's good. That's
and
good
you helped break the floors in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah, I was doing some sliding. I was doing the moonwalk.
That's good. You were, you know, dancing a little jig on the new floors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Good work.
Very
there.
Nice.
You're doing the opposite of the Lionel Richie. He was dancing on the ceiling as he was eating on the floor.
Really going deep into your recesses of knowledge there, Mr. Minuk.
Yeah. So some people appreciate that dancing on the ceiling reference.
Well, it's a good reference. I just went a little over my head. I'm not a big Lionel
Which is
Richie
interesting
guy.
Considering you're 90 years old.
Well, the irony, of course, being that you're showing your age with your Lionel Richie reference there as opposed to me not understanding your Lionel Richie reference. Let's talk about Jágr, Doan, and Iginla.
Appropriate. Talking about older guys.
Older guys. There you go. Of the three, do you think there's one of the three that is more likely to get a contract than the other two? Do you think all three get signed as we sit here on July 15th, you know, 6 weeks or so ahead of training camp? Or is this the end of the line for all three players?
You know, it's a good question, Drew, because I don't know. And I don't know if one player has an edge over the other as far as signing another NHL contract. I'll tell you this much. We played the clip of Dave Poulin there. And Dave Poulin, by the way, was a great hockey player in the NHL and a great analyst. But, you know, I disagree with him a little bit. And that's because when you look at Jaromir Jágr's situation, he still scored 16 goals and 46 points last year. And I realize he slowed down, he scored more points than the majority of the players in the NHL, and you're talking about a top 10 player of all time. So, yes, the game has slowed down for him, but if I'm an NHL general manager and I have a deep roster of forwards, I'm putting him on the fourth line, maybe the third line, putting him out there on the second power play unit. Maybe he plays 8 to 12 minutes a game. Maybe he's your extra forward. Maybe, you know, towards the end of the season you need to scratch him a little bit. I think Jaromir Jagr still has a little bit to give. And, you know, sure, he's in his mid-40s now, but we know, Drew, you know, that Jaromir Jagr still keeps his body in immaculate condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Jaromir Jagr is wearing down or anything like that. This guy is in really good shape. And when you're talking about Jerome Iginla and Shane Doan, this is why they've played this long in the NHL, guys. These are all players that keep their bodies in excellent condition, unlike me, by the way. So when you're talking about Jerome Iginla might have had a bit of a down year, and it didn't work out for him with the Los Angeles Kings. He still popped in 14 Gs. So if I'm a team, and again, I don't think that any of these players are going to go to teams that weren't in the playoffs last year or aren't, let's say, Stanley Cup contenders. So if I'll throw some teams out
so
there.
So you don't think they're just going to chase a contract? You think they want to chase a realistic opportunity to win a Stanley Cup?
When you're talking about Iggy, I mean, Iggy's never won a Stanley Cup. If I'm the Calgary Flames, I've got a pretty deep roster of forwards. Why not have Jerome Iginla on my team? Calgary went in and they acquired Travis Hamonic. You know, they've acquired a goaltender in Mike Smith. I mean, Calgary is in it to win it this year. So why not bring it back to where it all started for Jerome Iginla? Or the Edmonton Oilers, another team. Jerome Iginla can fit into the Edmonton Oilers, no problem.
Edmonton kid, too?
Absolutely. So, I mean, would I be surprised if any three of these players sign? No. I don't know if all of them are going to sign. I think it's going to happen later in the summer. It might happen here in July. But even a guy like Shane Doan, and we've got Sarah McClellan coming up, even though it didn't work out for him coming back for one more year, because apparently he was in between retiring or coming back, Shane Doan, to me, can add an element to a team. Are these guys slower? Of course they are. They're in their 40s. But these guys can still contribute.
The thing about Doan that I find more interesting than the other two is the other two were you know, they were pure goal scorers. Shane Doan was never a, you know, never sort of a, not one-dimensional, because that's not fair to Iginla and to Jagr. But those guys aren't really going to contribute much on the defensive side of the game. Whereas Doan was always more of a two-way forward than Iginla and Jagr. So I think, you know, there might be even more of a bottom six role available for Doan that's less focused on power play time and less focused on strictly goal scoring.
What about a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, Drew? Tampa Bay Lightning re-signed Andre Palat. They've re-signed Tyler Johnson.
We're going to talk about that coming up at 10:45 this morning.
Why can't Shane Doan fit in a fourth-line role similar to what Brendan Morrow did years back?
I think what it comes down to is that there's no urgency from teams. Like, you have an opportunity to take a look at what you've got, and then these guys are around. And if you feel like, you know, a guy like Jaromir Jagr can add some experience to a young team, or, you know, a Las Vegas Golden Knights, where some people have talked about maybe a Jagr going to, you know, perhaps he goes there, or like as he talked about, maybe they go to a team where there's a Stanley, you know, I mean, Jagr obviously isn't chasing Stanley Cups like the other guys, but, you know, I mean, it's clear that that's what they're looking for. That's what they're looking for, that opportunity. And Iginla still could put the puck in the net, you know, I mean, and again, they're going to be doing this in a reduced role. So if you're willing to take a little bit less money and have that opportunity to win a Stanley Cup for a team as a role player, maybe they do that.
And Dave, if you look around the NHL and you look at players on fourth lines, if you're talking about Jerome Iginla or Jaromir Jagr, I wouldn't be surprised if either of these players have 10 to 20 goals, 35 to 40 points next year. That's actually pretty darn good for a fourth liner, right?
Sure. I mean, it's better than most fourth lines. It's better than any fourth line we've ever seen here in Winnipeg, if you want to bring it back to the local team.
Like two out of these three players are surefire Hall of Famers. Shane Doan, maybe not a surefire Hall of Famer, but what he's done in his career, I mean, you could make an argument that he's close to being a Hall of Famer.
He's going to be debated, but yeah, there's no question.
Iggy and Jagr go in right away.
There's no question.
Right? So 100%. You're not talking about just your average 40-year-old players. You're talking about Hall of Fame guys that even though they've slowed down, they can still contribute at this age.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that they can contribute. It's just, you know, it's sort of an interesting dynamic. I just don't see, you know, there's no surefire fit about any of these guys. Were you surprised that, you know, maybe not Iginla, because he's bounced around a lot, but were you surprised that Jagr and the Panthers split ways? Are you surprised they decided to go in a different way? And you same question about the Coyotes, and we'll talk about that with Sarah McClellan coming up at the bottom of the hour. Are you surprised that they didn't, you know, give them one more chance, one more year, that they said, okay, we need to create a clean split, your time is done with this, with our respective organizations?
I wasn't that surprised, Drew, and I'll tell you why. It's because of just what you said. It's because of their age. And Shane Doan, there were rumors that this was going to be his last year, and I think the Coyotes were hoping that it was going to be his last year. And when you're talking about Jaromir Jagr, he always says that, you know, he wants to play until he's 50 years old. But, I mean, there aren't many players in the history of the NHL that have been able to do what Jaromir Jagr has done. So I'm not that surprised that the Florida Panthers didn't bring Jagr back. When you're talking about Shane Doan, it's just the way it was handled. That's what I was surprised about.
Just that, you know, the press release and sort of booting you out the door at the same time almost?
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you guys. I was a little bit surprised at how it went down, but I think, again, we've seen it. This is becoming a younger players' league. It's a younger man's league. It's a faster league, and you have to be able to do that. And I guess the question, coming back to what we were talking about before, was, are you taking up a spot with a prospect that you could fill and help that player develop? If you give it to a player like Shane Doan, Jaromir Jagr, if you're a young team that's looking to develop, right? So you're saying, yeah, you could add some veteran presence and get a player who can help your young players, but you don't want to stifle that development growth, and you don't want to take up a spot that may be necessary for a young player to fight for and get with a veteran who you kind of know what you've got. And again, if you're a non-contending team, then to me, that's the only time. The only team these guys make sense going to is a team that's kind of like for their own careers. Not Jagr, but with a Ginland Doan. If you really want to chase it, then you've got to go for the best opportunity, and that's the bottom line. Because otherwise, what's the point? You've made enough money. I mean, you know, in theory, like, you can say, well, you never have, and you can always chase. But the reality is, we know they're not getting big contracts, so you really have to want it. And from the Coyotes' perspective, I would have to imagine that, as just mentioned, they really were hoping that Doan was going to retire, because from them, they could just shift him into a player role of coaching, or, you know, eventually
put him into the front office.
Sure, whenever he wants, because the reality is, he's the face of that franchise.
Does it take anything away? I mean, they talk about legacies and all that. If Shane Doan plays a year with a team other than the Arizona Coyotes organization, does it, you know, is it going to look weird if you see him wearing a Anaheim Ducks uniform next year?
Well, was it weird that Daniel Alfredsson was wearing a Red Wings uniform?
I thought so.
I mean, does it take, you know, does he lose anything of luster?
It's funny. I don't know. I like when players stay with the same organization for their entire careers. Like, players have a longevity like that. You know, when you have a player who's played for as many years as Shane Doan has, and he played within one organization, obviously Jets and, you know, Coyotes. But the fact is that when you have a player like that, to me, it's not a big stain. It's not like this guy's like never going to recover from this. But I mean, like I said, with Albertson, it was weird when he was wearing a Red Wings uniform. And with Shane Doan, like, would it be weird seeing him in a Tampa Bay Lightning jersey? Yeah. I mean, is it going to be a huge negative? No, of course not. But it
doesn't change what he did in his career.
Yeah, exactly.
Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic is up next to talk about the Coyotes offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Sarah McClellan. Sarah covers the Arizona Coyotes for the Arizona Republic. Sarah, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Our pleasure, Sarah. We're going to get started with ownership news for the Coyotes, which seems to be more often than not a topic of conversation. But I think it's good ownership news in this time. And I think you know, to talk about the Andrew Barraway becoming the sole owner, the sole decision maker, the key driver of the Coyotes' future in Arizona. you know, from my perspective here in Winnipeg, that seems to be a good thing. Is that the consensus down in Arizona as well, that this is a necessary move to sort of solidify the Coyotes' future in Arizona?
Yeah, and I think it's consolidated, you know, the voice and the vision and the direction. You know, this is a move that he made last month, but we didn't get to talk to him until this week and kind of get, you know, some more clarity on his thought process and why he pursued buying up his minority partners and the passion and his hope and dream that he would own this on his own one day. I think he said it just made it easier. Maybe it was a little bit of a case of too many cooks in the kitchen and you have a group of 10 voices, and getting all 10 to agree on every situation is difficult. He said there wasn't any major issues or disagreements, but it just seems to make this process easier. And it's a process that obviously he's been very busy for the Coyotes this summer. There's been a lot of changes on the ice, you know, personnel off the ice. And then, of course, there's still an arena situation that has to be attended to. They're still looking for a permanent home in the Valley of the Sun. So to kind of streamline that process, I think, was, part of his focus in pursuing, you know, sole ownership of the team.
Sarah, why did Coyotes general manager John Chyka decide to name Rick Tocchet the new head coach? Why was he the best man for the job?
Well, I think he came in probably saying what a lot of candidates say when they interview for a head coaching job. You know, they want to play fast, they want to play up tempo and use their players' skill and be aggressive and dictate the action. But it sounds like Rick came in and he had a video presentation and he showed how to do that. He really gave concrete examples to the Coyotes of how he was going to get this young team to play. And I think that was very impressive for them. This is a team that obviously is rebuilding, hasn't made the playoffs since 2012. And really has a young core here that is kind of on the brink of, you know, are they going to become really good, established, proven NHL players, or, you know, were they successful junior players, but it's still going to take them some time to find their footing in the NHL. They're kind of on that teetering point of who are these young players going to be in the NHL, and they're looking for that push to get them to solidify their spot as established, proven NHLers. And so I think they feel that Rick can come in, implement this style that, you know, sort of lines up and could complement their strengths and, you know, instigate some progress here. You know, I don't think they're putting expectations on wins and losses and making the playoffs right out of the gate, but he's coming in with a vision, I think, that they think complements what their young players can do, and getting those young players to maximize their potential is critical. I mean, not only critical to improve and get this rebuild, you know, going in a positive direction and completed, but just to excite and play a brand of hockey that gets people entertained and up out of their seats and really engaged with the team locally.
Sarah, you talked about addressing vacancies in the front office, and the team also hired Steve Patterson to be the president and CEO. What do you think his role will be and with the team?
His chief responsibility, I think, is probably going to be overseeing this arena search and finding a long-term solution for the team in the Valley. Obviously, they're playing next season still at Gila River Arena in Glendale, a suburb of Phoenix. They have yet to really look at the 2018-19 season, but they do have a mechanism in their contract with the city of Glendale that, you know, it can auto-renew on a year-by-year basis, it sounds like. So that's kind of how they're looking at it, is year-by-year. So his, I think, main objective is going to be trying to find something that fits here for them outside of Glendale and really, finding a solution to an issue that has long been on this team's agenda, but that they've honestly struggled to solidify. You know, this is a search that's been going on for years, and so bringing Patterson in, he's the former athletic director for Arizona State University, so he's familiar with the area. He's been a sports executive for pro teams before, so they hope that he has this, you know, mix of experience and knowledge locally that could help them get this issue taken care of finally.
Sarah McClellan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sarah is with the Arizona Republic. She covers the Arizona Coyotes. Sarah, before the Coyotes hired Rick Tocchet, the big news was, of course, the parting of ways with then-head coach Dave Tippett. Just how, maybe poisonous isn't the right word, but just how tumultuous had the relationship become in the front office of the Coyotes between then head coach Tippett and John Chyka and Andrew Barraway, the new sort of sole owner of the team?
I think it was more just Dave wanting to have a fresh start. You know, I don't think it was, you know, rocky or anything to that extent where it was so tumultuous they all couldn't continue to coexist. You know, I think Dave had been here for 8 seasons. A lot of them, you know, were tumultuous just because of the ownership situation previously. He had walked in when the league owned the team. He was coming on the heels of bankruptcy and Wayne Gretzky. And, you know, those were some trying times. You know, mind you, the team had success when that was the case. They went to the playoffs. They made a run to the Western Conference Finals. So it was very up and down. And I think it can just wear on a person. And so I think the timing he felt was right for him to explore something new. It'd been a long haul here, and there was a lot of change going on. So to make this type of change, the timing, I think, probably felt right. And so, you know, both sides at that point felt it, you know, mutually they could go their own ways and explore something that worked for them now.
Sarah, you wrote about this a couple of days ago, Andrew Barraway publicly apologizing for the way Shane Doan left. Are most Coyotes fans going to accept this apology? And do you think Shane Doan is going to sign another contract in the NHL?
You know, I think the reaction that I've seen so far is still mixed. And I think it's probably mixed along the lines of, some accept that apology. You know, they accept that, you know, Andrew Barraway said that I should have been the one to tell him the news in person instead of having general manager John Chyka do it. And then, you know, I think some are still put off by the whole process. And that was probably just the way it was going to be. Shane was, you know, here from the get-go when the team moved from Winnipeg to Phoenix. I think a lot of people just associate him with the Coyotes. There's, like we've talked about, there has been so much change and upheaval over the years for this team and uncertainty. And Shane was the constant. Shane was always there, and I think people really gravitated toward that and connected with that. So I think severing that relationship is still hard for some people and fans to accept. And then on the flip side, there's some that acknowledge that, okay, you know, Barraway accepted responsibility for how he handled the situation. And, you know, I think some agree with his reasoning for making the hockey decision, that Shane was going to be a 41-year-old who's coming off a down season and wondered the role that he could provide to this hockey team. So it sounds like he's still figuring out his future, whether or not he's going to play, retire. So to me, it's still really up in the air whether or not he suits up for a 22nd season. He does seem to be wanting to be patient, take his time, don't make any rushed, rash decisions. So I think that's where we're at right now with Shane, is just, you know, letting him take this time to figure out what he wants and then see, you know, if there's anything out there that impacts that decision.
Sarah, sticking with fan reaction, how have they taken to the news of, you know, the hiring of Rick Tocchet and the change, you know, the solidifying of the ownership and the young team that this, you know, that they have to watch? Is there a lot of excitement right now in the desert, or how are fans reacting to you about this team?
I think there is excitement because I think Rick probably stirs fond memories for a lot of fans who followed the team when they first began here. I mean, he was part of that entertaining cast of characters of Keith Tkachuk and Jeremy Roenick, and I think people associate him with those fun, exciting times. They were a competitive team back in the late 90s, and they were fun to watch. And so to have him come back with the pedigree that he's established in his career as a coach, winning the last 2 Stanley Cups as an assistant with the Penguins, I think they do see that potential. And, you know, having someone say, you know, we're going to play fast, I'm not going to take the stick out of guys' hands, I'm going to let them be creative, we want to be an offensive team, I think that entertains people, and I think that gets them excited. And I think Rick realizes that. You know, he said, this is entertainment too. And I think that's an important message in a market like this, because there are so many options to watch sports here. You can watch the NFL, you can watch the NBA, there's MLB, there's college sports. So if you want to entertain, I think that's a great message to get across to fans, to get them excited and looking forward to next season.
Sarah McClellan, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Arizona Coyotes. Sarah covers the team for the Arizona Republic. You know, moving to on ice and new additions to the Coyotes, you know, three big names. Antti Raanta is going to be the man in net for the Coyotes. Derek Steppen also comes over from the New York Rangers. And then they acquire Nicklas Chalmerson from the Chicago Blackhawks. What are the expectations for all three players as we enter the 2017-18 season?
Well, I think Steppen obviously gives them a number one center, which is a hole that they've had on, you know, their lineup for years. I think he comes in and just stabilizes them. This is a very young team, especially up front, and I think he comes in and just probably makes a lot of people's jobs easier because he's proven. You know what you're getting with him. And I think that's key, you know, not only for their offense, just but for the maturity and growth of their young players. And I think, you know, Chalmerson probably plays a similar role on the back end. You know, one of the best stay-at-home defensemen in the league. I think he, you know, gives the team a legit, you know, elite top pairing. You know, he'll be paired next to Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And I think that kind of mix of style of Ekman-Larsson's offensive heads-up awareness with Chalmerson's ability to be an anchor back there, I think it just gives them a solid pairing that they can probably roll out in any situation. And then in net, it's an opportunity for Raanta to prove himself as a number one. He's obviously had a really solid resume as a backup. He looks like he is ready for this chance, and the Coyotes want to give it to him. They really did their homework on finding a goalie to replace Mike Smith after they traded Smith to Calgary. And they really felt that Raanta was the best option out there, and they got the guy that they wanted. So we'll have to see how that translates, but they're confident in that. And so I think all these pieces, you know, come amid a very busy summer of change, but they do give this roster at least a chance, I think, to be better. They have a chance now adding some stabilizing pieces at, you know, each position group to have a chance to improve next season.
Sarah, final question for you here. Are you expecting the Coyotes to sign Anthony Duclair shortly, and do you think it's going to be tougher to determine how much money Duclair is going to make, considering that he went from 44 points a couple of years ago to 15 last year?
Yeah, they're in talks, obviously, and it is going to be a short-term deal. It is going to be a 1 or 2 year deal, and I think that is reflective of how up and down his career with the Coyotes has been. As a rookie, he scored 20, and as a sophomore, he scored 5 and was demoted to the minors and was a healthy scratch. So I think that's where they're at right now, is just putting the value on someone who's really been a mixed bag. I know they like him as a player. I think it's just, in their eyes, getting him back into that groove, getting him reasserted in the league, and then going from there. So, he plays a really important position for them. They're still kind of thin on that right side up front. So I think getting him back and giving him this chance to prove, you know, which player is he, will be key for them.
Sarah McClellan covers the Arizona Coyotes for the Arizona Republic. Sarah, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us. Have a great summer, and we'll touch base again in the when the regular season begins.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Take care, Sarah. Thanks again. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the moves of the Tampa Bay Lightning. They get Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat under contract. We talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Lightning win the draw. Here's Hedman with a shot. They score! Johnson out in front of the net, tips it into the open net behind Leonard, and the Lightning have tied this game at 1. And in front, Palat fires. They score! Andre Palat converts with a man advantage, and the Lightning get their 4-2 lead.
Steve Yzerman, Tampa Bay Lightning general manager, getting some work done, getting Andre Palat signed to a 5-year, $26.5 million contract. He was a restricted free agent. Now he's going to make $5.3 million for the next 5 seasons. Tyler Johnson, he was also a restricted free agent. He signs a 7-year, $35 million contract. He's going to make $5 million per season. So Steve Yzerman doing a great job getting a couple players signed to contracts on that Lightning team, a team that most people expect, of course, to compete for the Stanley Cup at least become a Stanley Cup playoff team again.
Well, they got to make the playoffs,
Drew, first of all. I know. Well, I was saying it was a down year last year, and most people expected them to be a Stanley Cup contender.
Well, I picked them to go to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Dallas Stars, and we know how that turned out last year. So
neither team made the playoffs. That's how that turned out.
Yeah, but you look at what those two teams have done, and specifically Tampa Bay, because we talked about Dallas earlier with Scott Burnside, Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Steve Yzerman is one of the best general managers in the game today, and you know, he identified that Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat were the preferred signings over Jonathan Drouin. So he moves Jonathan Drouin to the Montreal Canadiens, picks up Mikhail Sergachev, who should play, I believe, will play full-time in the NHL this year. And if he doesn't, he's certainly going to get a chance to play full-time in the NHL this year. Mm-hmm. He was really good for the Windsor Spitfires last year, winning the Memorial Cup, right? So when you're talking about this team, Andre Palat and Tyler Johnson, I mean, the key to me is the health of Steven Stamkos.
Sure.
And last year, he was a point-per-game player the first 20 games of the year, and then he obviously misses the rest of the year. But this is a very stacked roster, and really like the acquisition of Chris Kunitz. He's a guy that you can play on your third line. You mm-hmm. can play on your second line. I mean, up and down this roster, there's talent. And I realize that Dan Girardi is a player who the analytics community doesn't like, and I'm not going to argue with that. But when you can add a guy like Dan Girardi to your team after you lose a guy like Jason Garrison, mm-hmm. and you've already got Victor Hedman there, Anton Stralman there, Jake Dotchin is a very underrated defenseman. He was re-signed. This is a very deep team, and I would be shocked. I was shocked last year that they didn't make the playoffs. Same thing goes for the Florida Panthers, by the way.
Sure.
I think I actually picked the Panthers now that I think about it.
No, you picked the Lightning.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, either way, it was one of the Florida teams, but yeah. I would be shocked if the Panthers and Lightning don't get in this year, but especially the Lightning. There's just so much talent there. Andrei Vasilevskiy, finally, he's going to get the mantle this year to be the number one goaltender. Mm-hmm. And you know, these signings, I mean, these are the guys you want to lock up. They're 26, 27 years old. These are guys that you want under contract long term.
Well, that was going to be my question. And before I get to my question, I want to say, text us right now, 129090. Send us a text, 129090. In the body of the text, say Steve Yzerman, and we're going to pick somebody to win two passes to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. So text us, 129090, Steve Yzerman. We're going to give away a couple passes to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club.
I'm texting right now.
You're texting right now. Yep. I want to say, are you surprised Tyler Johnson got 7 years? I mean, this is a guy
bit.
Who
yeah, a little bit.
Had that 70-point season
yep.
a couple years back. That would be 3 years ago now. Then he dropped down significantly to 38 points, 45 points last year. I thought 7 years for Johnson might be something that maybe a little too long. And maybe even $5 million per season. I thought that if they're giving him that much term, I thought they might be able to get the dollar value a little bit lower.
Yeah, and he's had some injury problems. He hasn't played full years the last 2 years. And mm-hmm. you forget, he's only 26 years old.
Yeah.
Right? And you want to lock up those UFA years. So if you sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal, then you're dealing with a UFA at that point. So I was a little bit surprised. I thought maybe he'd be more of a 5 year, 6 year deal. But when you think about it, if you're thinking about a 5 year deal or a 6 year deal, what's an extra year? To me, it's just really making sure that he doesn't become a UFA earlier, right?
And it's a guy who your team already has chemistry with. The players right. like enjoy playing with yep. him. And you know, the one thing that Tyler Johnson is a testament to is why you never give up in hockey. Because I mean, you're talking about a guy who's an undrafted player and went and just signed a 7 year, $5 million deal.
Kind of reminds you of Marty St. Louis.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And that's my whole point. You've got a guy who, you know, there's knocks on him and you know, teams overlook him, and then he goes and does something like this. So I just think it's for those young players who sit there and they think to themselves, they didn't get drafted into the NHL. You know, do I need to quit? I mean, there really is some validation in really continuing and trying, you know, to get to that next level. And Tyler Johnson's a testament to that.
What about Andre Palat? He gets the 5 year contract. It's worth, as I mentioned, $5.3 million per season, $26.5 million over the next 5 seasons. A guy who does a lot. So he has a good two-way game. He's not the offensive dynamo, which really they don't really need. You got Kucherov, you have Stamkos. Those guys can, you know, drive the offensive bus. Not that Palat, you know, is he's still a 15, 17 goal scorer for the most part, but this is a guy who does a lot of two-way, a solid two-way winger.
Yeah, the steal of the 2011 draft, drafted in the seventh round. And you're right, Drew. I mean, he's not as dynamic as Nikita Kucherov, but he's an excellent scoring forward. You're right. He's more of a two-way winger, but he's a guy that, you know, he has the ability to pop in 20 goals or something like that. I believe he had 20 once in his first full year with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, he's more of a 40 to 50-point guy. Maybe, you know, with the right opportunity, maybe he gets over that 50-point mark again next year. But when you're talking about Palat, this is a guy that can play on your first line. He can play on your second line. He can play on your third line. He can play on the penalty kill. If you need to put him out there, he can play on the power play. A very versatile player. And, again, I really like this Lightning team. I can't say it enough. And I'm not biased. I'm not a Lightning fan or anything like that. But I really like what Steve Yzerman did, guys, because you look at where they are as far as the salary cap goes. I believe they only have $3 million in salary cap space. The fact that they were able to keep Stamkos, Palat, Johnson, Kucherov, all of these guys, Hedman together, is pretty remarkable considering that they just don't have a lot of salary cap space, right? And then you have some other younger players coming in like Mikhail Sergachev. Braden Point had an excellent rookie year last year.
They also have a team in Syracuse that just went to the Calder, you know, that did very
the
well.
The pipeline is still stacked.
That's what I'm, yeah, exactly. So you got a deep pipeline within the AHL framework for this team. So I think Ezzie's right. I think Steve Yzerman has done a really good job and managed to, you know, manage his assets, which is, as we know, in the NHL, key.
And you've got some other forwards in the Memorial Cup, Anthony Cirelli, Matthew Joseph. I mean, we're forgetting Taylor Radish.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, how could you forget Taylor Radish? He's a member of the all-food team.
Right. So they've got a good group of young prospects there that are going to complement these veteran players.
Yeah, I think the big question for the Lightning is, can Vasilevsky hold up to the demands of a number one goaltender
position?
It's a big
question mark. He's never done it before. I mean, he did play more games last year than he's ever played, Drew, but you're right. This is the first year that he's been given that number one goaltender role, so that is the one unknown right now.
That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic, Craig Custance of The Athletic in Detroit, and Scott Burnside of the Dallas Stars. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download via whatever podcasting tool you use. That's where you can find it. Also on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Big props to producer Chris, doing a great job. Congratulations to Brendan Wilson. He won the Bell Acres Golf and Country Club passes.
Attaboy,
for Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.